While this text is not studied as often as, say, 1 Timothy 3 and Titus chapter 1, which are the two main passages about elders, where they list the qualifications, God's message in 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 1 through 4, is a very important warning to elders, whether actual elders or potential elders. And I will just go ahead and say it. I'm looking at some young men that are potential elders, and men that have the opportunity to become that. And I want you to be encouraged by these lessons, not discouraged by them. Now, 4 weeks ago, we looked at elders, actual or potential, or we looked at the godly boundaries of elders. We looked at the godly boundaries. We looked at the idea of elders being and presbyters. There are three words here in the text here in 1 Peter chapter 5. And elders and presbyters is the name given to those men who have authority in a local church, as well as shepherds or pastors, and then overseers and bishops. Those are the three words that are here in the text that we would be familiar with as describing these men who are given oversight in a local congregation, that are selected by the congregation to serve in this capacity. And as we saw then, the word elder really just means older. It's referring to somebody who is more mature, who has wisdom, and then also would meet the qualifications spelled out in 1 Timothy 3 and Titus 1. Shepherd or pastor refers to the work of caring for God's sheep. In fact, pastor is from the same root that we get the word pasture. So you put sheep out into a pasture. It comes from the idea of feeding, caring, watching over the sheep. The word overseer or bishop is a word that just simply means someone who is in a position of authority, given a supervising or managing or a authority to lead the people of God, His church. That's what those words mean. And so we talked about those. It's been 4 weeks now, so I thought I'd remind you of those and just kind of go back over those very briefly. And there's no distinction between the three. They are an elder, is a shepherd, is a pastor, or is an overseer. They're all three the same thing, referring to the same person, just from different directions and referring to different perspectives or parts of the work that they do as God's elders. However, over history, men quickly changed God's pattern to satisfy human thinking. They began thinking, well, you know what, in the world it's done this way, so why don't we do it this way? And then on top of that, there were men who looked at it and said, well, if I get in the position of being an elder or a pastor or an overseer, a bishop in the Lord's church, that gives me authority. And I like authority, and I like to be in charge, and I like to have power. And so men began to change it and do things with that position that are unscriptural and ungodly. Elders are shepherds, are bishops, who have limited authority as a plurality serving in one local church that belongs to Christ. Any other authority structure, any other arrangement besides that where men can claim authority over multiple churches, or one man claims authority over one church or multiple churches, is a rejection of God's authority. It's just something that is not in the Scripture, that is not the way God set it up. What we want to do tonight, though, is look at the second part of the message here in 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 1 through 4, where he talks about their attitudes, the elders' godly attitudes. And I just got this picture of this guy serving, cleaning a table, and basically that's a servant, someone who just does what other people really don't want to do. I mean, when's the last time you were at a wedding or some kind of reception, and when it came time to clean up the auditorium, the facility, everybody disappeared and left a bunch of tables and chairs sitting there clean that you ladies typically have to go clean up. And hopefully some of the guys stuck around and helped as well. It's just being servants, having an attitude that is willing to serve. Well, tonight we want to look at this. And what we're going to do is let's read the text. I want us to read the text, 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 1 through 4. And then we'll look at these attitudes that are here in the text. 1 Peter 5, verses 1 through 4. Therefore, I exhort the elders among you as your fellow elder and witness of the sufferings of Christ, and a partaker also of the glory that is to be revealed. shepherd the flock of God among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but voluntarily, according to the will of God, and not for sordid gain, but with eagerness, nor yet as lording it over the flock, or to your lording over those allotted to your charge, but proving to be examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the unfading crown of glory. And so as we look at those texts, you're going to see three things in there, and I have them underlined and highlighted here, or in bold. And we're going to look at a series of not but statements here in this text. And he lists three attitudes for us to examine this evening. The first attitude is the idea of being grateful, not grumblers. The second one is being glad, not greedy. And the third one is being good, not grandiose. So, yes, I had to alliterate, just had to do it. My arm, you know, so something gets behind me and twists my arm and makes me come up with alliteration. I just can't help myself. Well, let's look at the first one, grateful, not grumblers. And that's in verse 2. Let's go back to chapter 5, verse 2. It says, shepherd the flock of God among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but voluntarily. So you have this not but situation. It's not this, but it's that. It's a series of contrasting attitudes here. He's saying, first of all, the idea is not under compulsion, but voluntarily. In other words, we want people who were saved, who want to serve as elders voluntarily. Men who want to become elders, who serve in that capacity as an elder, or pastor, or bishop, is someone who wants to do it and will volunteer for the work. And of course, all this assumes that they meet the qualifications from 1 Timothy chapter 3 and Titus chapter 1. But this is the idea, is that this is a deliberate decision of the will to do the work free of any external pressure from the church. In other words, you don't take an elder, a guy that we think should be an elder, grab him by the arm, jack him up like this and say, okay, you're going to be an elder whether you want to or not. It doesn't work that way. That's not the way we do it. We talk to them, we persuade them. We might have some people that are reluctant, maybe because they feel like they're not qualified or they that may need some persuasion. But then the decision ultimately has to be theirs. Every time I've been a part of an eldership process, a selection process, I say every time, last time I was not. But anyway, most of the time, the members are asked to go out among the congregation, look out among the congregation, going back to Acts chapter 6, where they were going and they looked out among the congregation and selected men to serve as deacons, and that semi-deacons in that situation, and go out and look among the congregation. Make a selection, make a decision. And the first thing you have to do is, if you think somebody's qualified, we had to go and talk to that person and ask them if they thought they were qualified and are they willing to serve. And if they're not willing, if they don't think they're qualified and we can't talk them into that, or maybe they know something about themselves, or if they think they're qualified, but they just don't think they want to do it, we don't push them into it. We don't pressure them into it. It has to be something they're willing to do. And that fits with Paul's letter to Timothy. Hold your marker there in 1 Peter. Look back over in 1 Timothy very quickly, in 1 Timothy chapter 3, and in verse 1, where he talks about elders and the qualifications. And the first thing he says in verse 1 is, it is a trustworthy statement if any man aspires to the office of overseer. That is something that they desire, something that they are looking forward to and seeking, that they want. So the qualified man who longs for or desires the work of an elder is reaching for, striving for, pushing for the work. And it is work. It is a job that requires a lot of effort. And he's reaching for it and wanting, because he wants to step up and bear the burden and serve in that capacity. That's what he wants to do. It's not something that they're trying to be forced to do, that they have to be forced to do. It's something that they're seeking, that they're pushing for, they're striving for. And And we'll talk about it in the right way, of course, in a moment. This kind of person is grateful to God and to his brethren for being entrusted with a good work. That's why I say grateful, not grumblers. They're grateful to God for giving them the ability and the opportunity, and for the congregation for giving them that opportunity, and they're going to give it their best because they want to serve the congregation. That's the kind of attitude that we're looking for in an elder, someone who wants to serve in that capacity. And guys, don't think of it in the from the standpoint of that you really have to just be perfect right now. That's something you work on. But also I want to think about something, think about this from this perspective. In this first century, when Paul was writing, or Peter was writing this letter, remember one of the main purposes of the letter is to prepare people for suffering, persecution from the state and from other people. And what could happen to elders? Maybe they get in the position and find out that, wait a minute, if I'm the elder, if I'm one of the elders of this church, when the soldiers come looking for somebody to arrest, who are they going to get? They're going to go after the elders. They're going to go after those leaders. And so those leaders have to be willing to do this even in the face of possible persecution. That's the idea there, the goal to get them. And when one is forced to do this, when they're under compulsion, that's not under compulsion, that's the idea of external force or pressure to do something that one, that person does not want to do, they're not going to do it very well. And they're probably going to complain about it. Anybody here never heard of Eeyore? Never read Winnie the Pooh? All right. I don't see any. Okay, I said no hands saying no, never heard of him. Okay, well, if you hadn't heard of him, I'll tell you who. Eeyore is the donkey in Winnie the Pooh. And Eeyore is the, you know, I'll try, but you just don't know what's going to happen. And if I become an elder, there's going to be problems. And it's just not going to be good. You don't want that guy as your elder. Just don't. Now, they don't have to be skippy bouncing all over the place either, but you don't want somebody who just doesn't want to be there. We need men who will understand the blessing that Jesus offers to those who choose to serve him in this capacity. And service it is. That's why I use the picture of the service. Look over Matthew 25. And I want us to notice the parable of that Jesus gave here of judgment, or the description of judgment and how it was going to be in the day, in that day, and the kind of people that God was going to bless. And they have to recognize this is what they're going to be willing to do. And in Matthew 25, verse 34, it says, "Then the king will say to those on his right, 'Come, you who are blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world.'" So here he's saying in judgment, you guys, you people, here it'll be male and female, but we're talking about elders. So you guys who serve as an elder, you come and you're blessed. Come into my kingdom. Inherit what I've prepared for you. And then in verse 35, he describes the kind of people that inherit the kingdom. "For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me." Then the righteous, these good people, will say, "Wait a minute, Lord, I don't remember doing that." You know, they're not patting themselves on the back. They say, "Yeah, I know. No, there was that. When? When did we do that?" Verse 38, "And when did we, or verse 37, "Then the righteous will answer him, 'Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? And when did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or naked and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in person and come to you?' The king will answer and say to them, 'Truly I say to you, to the extent that you did it to one of these brothers of mine, even the least of them, you did it to me. So he's describing the attitude. This is an attitude that must be, I think, must be part of being an elder. The person who's going to be an elder is the kind of person who looks at people, sees their needs, and takes care of them. Too many elders see eldership as a managerial position where they just boss people around. And there is a little bit of the in that, but that's not the main thing. It's service. And so if this is the necessity for inheriting the kingdom for anybody, it very much is the necessity for someone who wants to be a leader in the Lord's church. A willingness, an attitude of service, and see that it is they have an opportunity to serve with energy and cheerful enthusiasm. They want to serve people. They want to serve God's people. That's an attitude that the elder must have. Look also in Romans chapter 12. In Romans chapter 12, there, again, it's a description of Christians in general, but it also would then apply to someone who wants to be an elder, that this is something that would describe someone who wants to be a servant in the Lord's church, leading in a capacity of service. Verse 10, he says in Romans 12, "Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Give preference to one another in honor. Not lagging behind in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord." And so when you have somebody who is an elder, they're not walking around patting themselves on the back and strutting through around the building acting like they're large and in charge because they're the elder. I'm the elder. I'm in charge. I do all this and I do all that. No, they don't do that. They don't have that attitude. Or at least the godly elder does not have that kind of attitude. The godly elder is, how can I serve you? And you. That's what their mind is doing. That's the attitude they put. And they do, and they're happy to do it. They're cheerful about it. As we'll see, especially when we talk about the word glad. Those are the kind of men God is calling to be elders. Elders don't walk around looking like they're sucking on a sour lemon. They shouldn't be. They shouldn't be. Not the godly elders that we're talking about here. Well, let's go to the next attitude. Glad, not greedy. And that's also in verse 2. Let's go back to 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 2. And he says this. He said, "Shepherd the flock of God among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but voluntarily, according to the will of God, and not for sordid gain, but with eagerness." Eagerness. And that's where we really get into this idea of being cheerful. The word eager is an interesting word because it indicates the idea of desiring before. It's something they want. And so you want this. You want not the title, not the glory, but you want the opportunity to serve. That's what a godly elder does. That's the kind of attitude a godly elder has. They want to be able to serve people. Not to be in charge, not to be controlling, but to serve others. They see it as that opportunity, and they're cheerful, and they're enthusiastic about it, and they approach it with zeal. It's not something that we dread, it's something that we want. Now, how many of you have the same pet peeve that I have? And that is mixing the word anxiety with eager. Anxiety is the idea of stress of not looking forward to it. It's kind of dread. Eager is looking forward to something that we want, something that we desire. But how many times will people say, I haven't heard so much lately, but I used to hear all the time people say, "Well, I'm so anxious to see you." Wait a minute. That sounds like you don't want me to come. If you're anxious about seeing me, I'd much rather that you're eager to see me, that you can't wait to see me. Now, for you young people, you ever get in trouble with your dads? And, you're home with your mom, and you got in trouble, and your mom said, "Just wait till dad gets home." Are you eager for dad to get home, or are you anxious about dad coming home? You're anxious. You're a little nervous about it. You're not looking forward to it. But if you've got something special planned, and when Dad gets home, he's going to take you and you're going to go do X, and it's going to be so much fun. Now you're eager for that. That's the difference here. That's the idea here of that eagerness, that desire. The godly elder is a person who wants to serve because they just can't wait to do what is right for other people. The men who are to serve as bishops of God's flock have to be glad to be serving, have to be eager to serve. They have to approach it with zeal and cheerful enthusiasm. Now, this section turns to the other side of the coin. You know, on one side is the glad, cheerful person who is eager to take on the role of elder so that they can serve. On the other side is the person who is eager to serve for selfish reasons. In particular, greed, or sordid gain, or filthy lucre, as it's called in the King James Version. One version put it this way: eager to serve for what you will get out of it. In other words, it's all about me. You, the church exists to either be a source of money for me, or a source of glory for me, or a source of pleasure for me. That's not the kind of elder that God wants. That's why He says, not for this, but for that. And here's the thing that we need to understand about this. Anybody here addicted to opium? Yep, let me go back. Opium. And I don't mean opium as in heroin or the other drug. I'm talking about other people's money. Other people's money. People get in and get into political offices, can become quite addicted to the opportunity to get their hands on other people's money. School boards are bad about this, by the way. I don't know about Grayson County. I don't want to pick on Grayson County because I don't know anything about them. But I don't know how many times I've seen in the news where school boards, people get elected to a school board so that they can get money, because there's a huge tax base there that they can dip into for personal use. And it goes all the way from the dog catcher up to the president's. People look at their office and look at that as a position and an opportunity for getting money. Why do you think so many congressmen get elected, Republican, Democrat, get elected with nothing, and their assets are very limited, and then by year two or four of their being in office, they're multimillionaires? Where did all that money come from? Well, why did they have all that? Because they're willing to take money. Opium. Well, the thing about it is, churches collect money. 1 Corinthians 16, they lay by in store. You put it so that there's not a collection when I come. And so you put it into a common treasury. And there are elders who look at that common treasury as theirs. And so if I have to go do something for the church, well, then I'll just pay for it out of the treasury. Or even some will just steal from it directly. People see that as an opportunity. That's not the kind of people that we want as elders. We don't want people who see it as an opportunity to have access to other people's money. Look over in 1 Timothy chapter 6. Paul's writing to people who are struggling with false teachers, and there are false teachers who see the church and their brethren as a source of funds. Beginning in verse 3, he says in 1 Timothy 6 and verse 3, he says, if anyone advocates a different doctrine and does not agree with sound words, those of our Lord Jesus Christ, and with a doctrine conforming to godliness, he is conceited and understands nothing, but he has a morbid interest in controversial questions and disputes about words, out of which arise envy, strife, abusive language, evil suspicion. So they just have a bad heart all the way around. And constant friction between men of depraved mind and deprived of the truth, who suppose that godliness is a means of gain. But godliness actually is a means of great gain when accompanied by contentment. Not gain financially, but gain by virtue of becoming like Christ and fulfilling the work that they had been given to do. That is the kind of men we want as elders. You all know I'm on Facebook. I recently saw a series of posts on Facebook by this one group of gospel preachers, and they were pointing out where there was a man who was a preacher for a big church in Dallas who somehow or another finagled the church into making him a trustee, got his name on the church in the court documents as a trustee of the church, and emptied the bank account. So a preacher should stay away from money as much as the church treasury. In fact, when I was praying, I never touch the contribution plate. Don't want to have anything to do with it. Don't even get anywhere near it. A godly man will be eager, as an elder, for God's sake, not for his own financial gain. Well, the last one is good and not grandiose, and that's in verse 3. Let's go back to 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 3. Nor yet as lording it over those allotted to your charge, but proving to be examples to the flock. So it goes again, here's that not but. Not this, but that. On the one hand is the lording it over those allotted to their charge. And this is the attitude that makes becoming an elder not about money per se, but about power. About the ability to have control over people's lives. The godly elder wants to be a good example, showing God's people how to live in pure lives in an ungodly world so that they can maintain control over themselves, not that the old elder can maintain control over them. They don't want to be filled with power and control. One thing about this, and I'm looking at the good side of this first, going back to verse 3. But proving to be examples to the flock. Elders, godly elders, are going to be men who know that one bad decision, one blow up, one mistake can ruin the reputation and can ruin a church. And so they are going to do, as an individual elder and the eldership as a whole, they're going to do everything they can to make sure that they set the right example on how they handle money, how they treat other people, how they are when in mixed company, and all of the things that would demonstrate that here's how you live a godly life. They're going to do that. They're not going to let themselves mess up and destroy themselves or the church as best they can. Because he knows that one mistake can destroy a lifetime of good reputation. Now, on the not side of this, this is the side that we don't want. To the men filled with pride who want to be in charge. Lording it over is determined to take charge and force his will on others. And it seems like, I don't know what happened in COVID. I think during COVID, just churches and people in the whole world lost its mind. And it seemed like a bunch of elderships that I'm aware of just became... thought that they were in charge and they would just tell everybody what to do and they could issue orders and everybody had to be like little children and just hop along and obey whatever they said because you have to submit to the elders. And they just seized control and became little dictators. Those kind of men, they want the title and the honor and the power that comes with it. Now they may put on a good show as posers, but in their heart, it's all about telling others what to do. They want to be able to say, you do what I say. And I'm going to say this because I know some elderships that did this and I didn't agree with it and I don't agree with it and I want to make sure you understand I don't agree with it. When an elder has to say, we're the elders, you must submit. They've disqualified themselves, in my opinion. Because now it's about control and authority. Matthew chapter 20, Jesus says, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great men exercise authority over them. It is not this way among you. This is not the kind of quality and not the kind of attitude that we want in elderships. And then sometimes it bursts out in dictatorial pride, which is the example I was using. But I've also seen the other side of this. The other side of this is, and I'll be honest, I was an elder for 9 years, and I had to really fight that just do what I say kind of attitude. I had to fight that. But I also know of the other side of that is, well, I wouldn't tell anybody what to do, but we're not going to make a decision until I agree with what we want to do. And so under the guise of humility and submission, they won't let any decision be made. Because they're just as determined to have their way as the dictatorial type, but they put such a humble face on it. We need to be very careful in watching out for those kind of people as well. It's not this way in the church. It's just not supposed to be that way. Well, you know, that's one of the things I love about this church. And I'll just say this about you. I don't get that impression that there's any the impression that there's anybody here at the Lilac Road Church of Christ, men and women alike, who want to be in charge so they can have their way. What I see is people who are busy living out the grateful, glad, and good side of these not but statements, and are working diligently not to be grumblers or greedy or grandiose. I only pray that it may continue to be so. And I ask, though, that the Lord may one day give us men who serve as elders, who will submit to the biblical boundaries that we talked about at the beginning and last time and embody these godly attitudes. That's what we want. And so again, I'm looking at some of you young men. Think on these things. Prepare your hearts and your minds to serve in this capacity someday. Well, let's wrap up with this. Here we are. We are these three things: grateful, not grumblers; glad, not greedy; good, not grandiose. And so, but here's the plan of salvation that we need to talk about. If you're not a Christian, then no amount of being grateful, glad, or good will qualify you for heaven. In fact, even if you're a Christian, that's not what qualifies you for going to heaven. It's being submissive to the will of God and being forgiven by the blood of Christ that qualifies us for heaven. But the inheritance that is promised to the faithful is not given to the unfaithful and to the unbelievers. But here's the good part of this, and we'll wrap up with this. It can be yours. If you're not a Christian, you can become one. All you have to do is believe that Jesus is the Christ, repent of your sins, confess His name, and be baptized in water, and then choose to live, growing in these attitudes, developing these attitudes. It's not going to happen overnight. Not going to happen in a week or a month or a year. It's going to take years for it to build and just you'll continually be growing and maturing. But the main thing is that you have a share in the inheritance when you become a Christian. And so we beg you tonight, if you're not a Christian, become one. Let us help you. Please come while we stand and sing.